Tweet at TodaySOR.
Time now for this month's book club. I'm joined in studio by Natasha Fennell, director of Stillwater Communications, author and actor Mary McAvoy, and author and broadcaster Brent Pope. And also in our Cork studio, novelist and UCC lecturer Eivor Walsh. You're all very welcome. This month, we've been reading Michael Harding's Hanging with the Elephant, a story of love, loss, and meditation. The book is a follow-up to Michael's best-selling and award-winning memoir, Staring at Lakes. Now, if you've been reading along with us, we'd love to hear from you even still. You can text us on 51551 or call us on 208-2198. Now, before we start, let's hear briefly with Michael reading an excerpt. He's explaining a bit about who the elephant in the title is.
The reason why my guru once told me that the mind is like an elephant was to explain how very hard it is to discipline the mind. Even with strong ropes, it's not very easy to keep an elephant still. It'll go where it wants unless it's trained. But beginning again to think of the mind as an elephant was making me tense. I can't win here, I told myself. If my mind was a horse, I wouldn't be able to control it. An elephant is way beyond me. It's ridiculous. Why bother at all?
Michael Harding there, Hanging with the Elephant is the name of the book. Eivor Walsh, to come to you first, just tell us a little bit about Michael Harding and again, the book itself, what's it about?
Well, it gives us a sense of a particular period of time. He takes this period of time where his beloved, as he keeps calling her, his partner, goes off to Poland for 6 weeks and she has work, her own work to do there and her own creativity. And he, of course, he's feeling a bit afraid, a bit lonely, misses her. And this is really his sort of account of his time on his own. And a lot of it's very funny. Like he goes back to where they live and he starts deciding he wants to wash clothes and that doesn't work out very well. And he wants to, you know, eat healthy every day and that doesn't turn out so well. But what he's also interested in doing is writing, going out walking in the hills, he's meditating, things like that. And so he's focusing also on his time alone and his sense of it as a time for, you know, reflection and meditation, and I suppose a lonely time as well.
Yeah, let's just hear another extract. Michael is reading about when his mother came to stay.
She stayed another 6 days, but insisted on going home before New Year's Day. We watched her pack her bag like a sorrowful child, heading off to a grim boarding school on the last day of December. And we put the small presents we had given her on Christmas morning into the boot of the car. On each of the 6 days of Christmas, unbeknownst to us, she had written another terse little report in her diary. Not well today. Very upset about the water, he did nothing, I have no one to help me. And then the next day, stayed up to watch the New Year on television. Nobody rang. And then the next day she wrote, nobody called. Bad day.
Eivor, to stay with you in Cork, that really conveys a sense of loneliness that his mother experienced and maybe a little bitterness as well in old age. Does Michael himself come across as lonely in the book?
I suppose he's missing his beloved and he has this time to himself. But I thought the focus of the book was his sense as a son and after his mother's death, his sense of her life and his place in her life. And as we heard in that piece there, you know, his attempts, him and his family, his attempts to, you know, spend time with her and to, you know, give her a sense of companionship. I thought it was a really good portrait of old age, his mother's old age. And I suppose a lot of the book, he talks about himself, but in those sort of passages, he really focuses on, as he's clearing her house, he's kind of going over her life and he's imagining and knows what that life was for her, particularly towards the end.
Natasha, there's great imagery, there's great portrayal and conveying of the sense of the rural. And certainly, as you start off the book, a great sense of self-deprecation that can be quite funny. What was that your sense of it?
I thought the book had many themes in it. I think the beginning of the book was absolutely hilarious. It tells a story about his wife, like Ava is saying, heading off to Poland for the 6 weeks. And I thought then the story, he talks about the fact that he can eat as much as he like, he can belch, he can fill the sink with dirty dishes. He doesn't have to feed the, you know, he nearly doesn't have to feed the cat or the dog. He basically will be a man alone and doing what men do, according to himself, what they really want to do when they're alone, that the women aren't at them to be anything but to be himself. I think his detail, his attention to detail in his writing is profoundly moving. And his relationship with his mother becomes the heart of the story. Although I didn't think that's what was going to be. I thought the book was going to be about, when I read it in the beginning, this guy's going to be on his own for 6 weeks. He's going to go on a little journey. And when his wife comes back, he'll come out the other end and that'll be the end. But actually, it was really about the profound impact that the relationship that his mother and his mother relationship had with him, and the profoundness of the either lack of love or the lack of affection or the wanting for more affection that he had, and seeing her in her final years was profoundly moving. I think though that there was confusion at times for me as to where the story was going. I think he told the mother story and then told it again, and I think at times it kind of lost momentum. I wasn't sure where it was going, but that said, the profoundly moving passages, and anybody will relate to this book with regard to his relationship with his mother, is particularly, that's why it's worth reading.
Brent Pope, he has written a lot obviously about mindfulness and depression. Do we get much of that in this book?
Yeah, we do, and it was quite poignant for me to read. I agree, you know, that it, the use of imagery was incredible, I thought. And I enjoy the book? That's a hard one to say, because it certainly dredged up, I suppose, memories I have myself of mental health issues. I kind of disagree. I thought the thread of it for me, and it's only a personal opinion of what these things are, for me, the thread through the book was loneliness, I think. You know, he put his mother up on a pedestal when, in a sense, she probably didn't deserve it in a lot of it. You know, he talks about, she said, don't be crying in front of me. That was a sort of a sign of weakness. And I suppose going back in my own circumstances, I can kind of see that. And it's about his failings as a son, I think, more than anything. And I quite like the style that kind of goes from the present back into the past, dips back into the present. And I also love the humorous parts, as sorts of trying meditation for about 10 minutes and going to yoga classes and Pilates and these sorts of things and being contorted and then giving it up.
And so, the Cavan version of meditation is dozing.
Exactly, dozing. So I love that, and the writing style was brilliant. But I think it was ultimately a story of kind of this one-sided love for his mother and this adoration that he had for her, even though she could be quite cool and cutting. And even in the segment he wrote there about her leaving, you know, too early, like he wanted to stay those days and she just took off her own accord. And also the fact is, he felt that, I always felt growing up with low self-esteem and anxiety and lack of self-confidence, that I would fail at everything. Now, thankfully, I haven't. I've got around that. But there was an essence of that for me that ran through the book, that he had failed. And right to the end, I think the girls will disagree, that I think it was kind of a sad love affair, even with his beloved, because I think he was kind of yearning for an extra love, a love maybe that he had for his mother over his beloved. And even though he gets her back, as when she's back from Poland, it kind of is a situation where he actually feels alone, I think, in that relationship too, ultimately.
Mary McAvoy, of the five of us, I think you physically live closest to the part of the country that Michael Harding lives and writes about, and you've endured, I suppose, some of the similar experiences. What did you make of it?
Well, I unashamedly loved it. I'm a big Michael Harding fan, and again, we were discussing it outside, and I would disagree with Brent about Michael's relationship with the beloved, because I think it's a terribly realistic relationship in the sense that it's he recognizes his needs, and his beloved recognizes Michael's needs, but it's a very equal relationship at the same time. It's not sentimental, and it's not a holdy handy kind of gazing into one another's eyes kind of relationship. There's a much deeper soul relationship there. And with his mother, I mean, I found I have to confess, and this is I hands up, so you know, sue me. I rang Michael halfway through the book and I just said, I'm just loving this.
Now, does he not come across as a bit of a slob in it at times?
No, no.
I mean,
not
the carry on the night before she heads off to Poland with a drink.
But who wouldn't do that? I do that myself. I mean, you know, and what I loved about it was that whole thing of, you know, winning the book awards, and that would be a great thing. But suddenly it's so transient and it's gone. And about the sort of the sadness and the loneliness, to quote the first sentence of The Road Less Travelled, the first sentence of The Road Less Travelled is life is difficult. And I think once you accept the difficulty and the lonelinesses and all that kind of thing, paradoxically life becomes easier because you stop resisting them. And that's what I thought this was about. And also the relationship with his mother. I think, while not typical, I think a lot of people will recognise that unspoken love, that unsatisfied relationship that is there. I've had it. I think I think it's a very rural thing as well.
And wondering, was she ever going to be satisfied, Natasha?
Yeah, I mean, that was a bottomless pit. I think it was a tiny bit unfair on the mother, because we didn't hear that much about her. By all accounts, she fed him chicken soup a lot. She gave, you know, there was a different time. The expectation of a mother in those times was quite different to an expectation now. So even though in it he says very clearly, and he states it, did I fail my mother and has my mother failed me? But you didn't really get the feeling that she had really failed him. You got, you know, there was yes, she said, don't cry, go upstairs. That was the times they were in it. And he was an exceptional man himself who obviously needed deeper affection. So also, I think the character of Michael Harding, and at times I wasn't sure whether it was really Michael talking or was it somebody else. You know, did he add a little few fictional bits to the character of the Michael Harding, the Michael in the book?
Oh, I don't think so. No.
Because I think this genre is called creative fiction. So I think you're allowed to have a bit of creativity when it comes to,
I don't think this is fiction at all. I mean, I think this is absolute.
It is
an autobiography, but I don't think it's fictionalised.
I think that, no, but I think there are threads there that seem to be sort of, not blown out of proportion, but changed.
Like what?
Well, I just think that, you know, it's very descriptive, and I don't know if that's that realistic. I mean, it's a great writing style, and don't get me wrong, I love the book, and I love the imagery. I absolutely love the imagery. But, I mean, I don't know whether that's a realistic description of some of the thing. I think he's giving some poetic license to the way that he feels tied up in a yoga class, but that's just great writing.
You love the imagery. Like, sad as a wet field that even the cattle have abandoned. Coming back to you, Ava, in Cork, Michael Harding, as we know, used to be a priest. A lot of his work is about looking for spiritual fulfillment. Now, does he capture that search for spiritual nourishment in what is sometimes called post-Catholic Ireland?
Well, I think that's probably why his last book was so popular, and I think that's why this one will be equally popular, because he goes through, I mean, in this, I haven't read the previous one, but in this book, he goes through all the kind of sources of spiritual belief, and he talks about his own experiences, and then, you know, what he looks for in meditation, what he looks for in various kinds of belief. But he also goes through it, I think, in his mother's life. I was very interested in two things the others were saying. First of all, when you write a memoir, everyone assumes it's the truth, and I wrote one and published it, but you sort of shape it around the idea of a novel. So I'm not sure how the material is being, you know, I think there is the possibility that you can shape it like a novel. And the other thing that struck me about the figure of his mother is that we got two aspects of her, I thought. We got his relationship with her, and that's his sense of maybe the emotional shortcomings and the disappointments that they had for each other. But beyond that, I thought we got a picture of her which was independent of his relationship with her as his son. And that's why it struck me as being almost like a novel. It kept reminding me of Colm Tobin's new novel, Nora Webster, which is about a widow and about a woman living on her own and living her life. And in this memoir where he goes through his mother's clothes and he goes through all her possessions, her life comes back through. And I thought, to me, it was like a novel, or like the potential for a novel, an entire life being created. And one of the things he was, I think, searching for was both his own belief and maybe hers as well.
Just to share some of our listener responses, have read Michael's book of late and was just very drawn to it and to his other book as well. Very honest and simple writing from Mary in Limerick, and Mary Chambers in Blanchardstown. Loved the book. It was a great read. And a woman who doesn't want to be named got in touch with us yesterday saying, just heard your clip from Michael Harding's book. When he spoke of being lonely in a marriage and a partner being a waste of space, he could have been talking about me. I stuck it out for over 20 years. I left 8 years ago. I love my life now, but sadly, two of my children can only see that I left poor daddy. These children are 36 and 26.
Yeah. See, that's, I think, I'm going to disagree with Mary. I think that for me, and again, that's the great thing about these book clubs, is people, you know, have a right to disagree. I thought it was really sad at the end of the book. And yes, I appreciate that, you know, love has its ups and its downs. But I just think when she was coming back through the sort of turnstile there, and he spilt his drink on her, that was the only offering. Like, I think he craved for her to come back and say, I missed you and you know, been away and that. But that never happened. And I just thought, you know, some of his descriptions throughout the book of people gazing into each other's eyes, or when the lady left to go to the toilet, you know, the man left to go to the toilet, how she missed him. I think he's a hopeless romantic. Yeah, I think
a hopeless romantic.
I think it's unfulfilled.
All the images that he's portraying of the lovely girl in the cafe
and the woman
in the thing, and everybody looks beautiful and flowy and butterfly-y. So he's a hopeless romantic, which makes it for beautiful reading. But how much you can cling on to that, I don't know. Like the woman in the coffee shop, he bought her
breakfast. He stops himself texting, saying little things that she would care about, like,
he wants to talk to every woman.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It actually reminded me a bit of and the scenery in Leitrim and the bogs and the nature reminded me a bit of Walter Macken for some reason. The setting, where he was, the setting, and the guy in the local shop buying the rasher and the bacon and the eggs, all of that. So there was a romantic and a rawness to it, which I found really attractive. And I'm a Connemara girl, so I kind of completely relate to that base, the basics of living in a windy, boggy environment, but hopeless romantic.
But I disagree with that, because I think that what Michael is doing in terms of the characters that he talks about is not really longing for them, but actually seeing them in their entirety. That's what I thought about the girl in the cafe. And the other thing that I think is terribly important in the context of the book, in terms of why this, his beloved going away for the 6 weeks, was rather a big thing, was because it was his first time alone after his documented physical and mental breakdown. So he was surviving on his own. He was just about, but that was a failing of his again. Surviving on his own as a person who had a huge trauma in his life, huge inner trauma in his life. And then the other thing, which I think is that, so how many of us get up and say, I'm going to go to the gym, I'm going to do this, I'm going to have a flat stomach, I'm going to be enlightened. Mm. And he was just giving us all permission to have all these things
and not never fulfill them, but
fail but keep on going. You know, as Beckett said, fail better. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's what it is, because Michael just looks at life, he sees it in this entirety. He's not afraid of sadness. He's not afraid to look it in the face. And yet he has great humour. And that's why I found the book quite uplifting.
I see it completely differently.
Yeah, no, it's amazing.
I do, and that's the great thing. I do see it completely different. I think that, you know, talks about the illness, but he also talks about having a midlife crisis where he's going off to Paris to discover the world. Yeah. So he was quite happy to leave his beloved then.
And gets
as far as Mullingar. But I mean, that's his failings, and it's just a book. It's just a book that I don't think he's fulfilled anything in his life. I think that, you know, he longs for a greater love from his mother that he never had. He longs for a greater love at the end of the day when his beloved that he never has and he'll never get. You know, he thinks his writings are failings. He thinks as a man he's a failure.
But don't we all feel there's a license to that? I also think that absolutely. That's why I'm asking about. Of course, a huge part of it is Michael Harding. But if you start off by saying I'm good at nothing. Well, then there's no expectation.
No, he said, I know nothing.
You know, he self-deprecates a lot.
Ava,
so that's the way out.
But he does talk about anxiety, about how a little bit of anxiety, and that's something that resonates with me, a little bit of anxiety can become catastrophic. You know,
yeah. Ava, what was your sense, though, at the end of the book about how well or otherwise the 6 weeks had been spent?
I think it didn't matter. I mean, as the others are saying, it's kind of that he just sets out like any of us to do a thing and maybe it doesn't get done. I think his real achievement is the voice and the tone that he takes, because all of us, there's nothing intimidating about him. He's also, I mean, I think it's like an actor. He's performing this voice all throughout. Like, you're already getting texts from people, you know, connecting to lots of his experience. To be able to bring into public what seems to be a private voice and a really personal voice, and make the interior life, the everyday life that we all experience, because, you know, he writes the Irish Times and he broadcasts and he does, and, you know, all this work. I think that's the really difficult thing to do, and I think he gets it, which is that it's as if we're sitting with him in that room dozing or going down to the shop to get dinner or whatever. It doesn't matter whether he succeeds or not. You feel like you've been through the whole thing with him, and to find the right tone on a kind of difficult topics around, you know, aloneness, grief, the loss of his mother, the, you know, sense of self-esteem, all these things. It sounds like it could be a terribly oppressive book, but because he gets this kind of personal conversational tone, and that doesn't happen by accident. Yeah. I think he's a very skilled writer.
Do you agree, Natasha, or do you think...
Absolutely. I think he's a superbly skilled writer. I think it's worth reading for the themes that are in it. The only struggle I had was how the story came together, the structure of the story. I started by wanting to go one place and it ended up somewhere else, which ended up being a pleasurable place to be. But he is an absolutely attention to detail, beautiful writer. There is no doubt about it. And what struck me as well is it's kind of like the Hiberno English. It kind of sounds like he actually spoke Irish really in his real life, but then he writes it in English because the structure and the way the sentences and the language and the diction he's using in the book is very, very Irish. And if you like that kind of thing, you love this book.
And I suspect if there was a CD made of him reading it, it would sell like
beautiful,
absolute hotcakes.
Beautiful.
It's just fantastic voice. So rich, so evocative. Mary, an unhesitating recommendation?
Oh, absolutely. And actually, unlike Brent here, I think it's quite uplifting because it gives you permission to be a completely just chaotic human being, which is what we all are.
Brent, who shouldn't read it then?
Well, I think everybody should read it. And I kind of agree. I mean, I think people that maybe have suffered from some sort of mental health illness or depression will find it quite hard going because it will take them back to periods in their life that they didn't feel particularly affirmative or you know, fulfilling. So I think that's quite difficult. And again, for me, some of the passages were quite hard for me. But I mean, I agree with the ladies. I mean, it was a fantastic read as far as imagery, fantastic read as far as just parts of humour when you're getting a bit down, suddenly inject something that says I tried the meditation or I tried to
Brent,
do this, you know.
You've had the last word. The book is Hanging with
Unlike
the Elephant.
George.
No, he's not here. By Michael Harding. My thanks to Ava Walsh in Cork and also to Brent, to Natasha Fennell and Mary McAvoy.